Welcome to Solder Smoke, a podcast by radio amateurs with a focus on homebrew electronics. We get together on the internet to swap ideas about radio construction projects. Our website is www.soldersmoke.com. Please send feedback to soldersmoke, that's one word, at yahoo.com. So, as we step away from our soldering irons and oscilloscopes, please join us for another edition of Solder Smoke. Hey, good morning, and welcome to Solder Smoke 50. It's the 18th of March, 2007. It's 0730 Greenwich Mean Time, very close to Greenwich, England. And this is Solder Smoke 50. You guys are undoubtedly noticing the new theme music, and I hope you like it. I know, you know, we're a very conservative bunch. We radio amateurs, so I'm sure some of you are saying, why is he using that music, and why doesn't he go back to the old music? But I want to tell you why we're using that new music, because it's very much music for us. It's very much homebrew music, and it comes to us from Mark, a.k.a. Moj Johnson. Mark writes in, Bill, as I threatened a few weeks ago, I've written theme music for Solder Smoke. The intro was intended for the beginning of the broadcast and the outro for the end. If you like it, it's yours to use. I had fun putting it together. I hope, then he talks a little bit about how much he likes Solder Smoke. He says, I listen to Solder Smoke at work in the electronics lab at Ohio State University's physics department. I design electronics for a living, but not RF. For fun, I'm currently building a couple of things from other people's designs. I designed my own PC board for the Warbler PSK31 transceiver and need to collect a few last parts, and I'm going to build the NorCal 40A to go along with Rutledge's The Electronics of Radio. I may make that my first Manhattan construction effort. I'm lucky enough to own a copy of SSD and need to finish it reading it someday. All right. Fine business. Mark here now about the music. Geeky details about the music. In the homebrew spirit, I tried to make all the sounds with instruments I had soldered together myself. Come on, guys, if that's not inspirational, I don't know what is. Mark goes on. These were a Formant music synthesizer designed by C. Chapman from the British Dutch Elector magazine circa 1977, and a Fat Man synthesizer kit from Paya Electronics. I play them through an ancient custom 200 guitar amplifier, which I've caused to smoke at least twice. Smoke has been released on the amplifier, gentlemen. The beginning is my K2 being powered on and tuned across 80 meters. I cheated and used a real gong at the end, which a good friend went to the trouble of finding and buying in China. But I fed the sound through a Pick Polywatset designed by John Becker and described in Britain's Everyday Practical Electronics, December 2001. If anyone wants to sing along, and of course they will, it seems to me that the words are solder, smoke, and then repeated over and over. Caution, guys, this is clearly the kind of thing that you're not going to be able to get out of your head. Mark goes on, music, all like all homebrew, is never truly done. Next time, I'll try to get a Thurman working again. There's a radio circuited musical instrument. And it says here, if my grandson has the site up, there will be a garage band music of his and mine on MySpace under Mike and the Ceiling, all one word. Enjoy. All right, guys. So this is clearly music for us, and I'm really grateful to Mark for putting that together. I hope I have all of it on the intro. I may have inadvertently cut out the bit about the K2, but if I have, I'll put it on in the next episode so you can hear the full beauty of Mark's electronic music. And at the end, stick around till the end, because on the outro there is that gong finale that's of course so important to all Solder Smoke listeners. great. Thanks a lot, Mark. All right. Moving on, kind of in an inspirational theme, I found out something this week that for me was kind of oddly and inexplicably pleasing. At work, I was reading about the International Polar Year, the IPY, and this is underway now, and it made me think about the International Geophysical Year, IGY. This was back in around the Sputnik times. It got a lot of attention at the time, and it resulted in what I think is a pretty good bit of rock and roll music called IGY by Donald Fagen. That may have also got me thinking about it. But then I started thinking, as a radio amateur, wouldn't it have been great to have been born during the IGY? I went and checked, and yes, gentlemen, yours truly was born in the IGY, and I think this may have been one of the things that set me on the course towards Solder Smoke. And I was born within a year of the launch of Sputnik. IGY was very focused on things about the atmosphere and the ionosphere and propagation and things related to the topics that we're interested in. So let's say three cheers for the International Geophysical Year. And maybe we can get a readout from other Solder Smoke listeners who were born in that auspicious period. Okay, on a similar kind of geophysical theme, important to keep in mind that we are approaching the vernal equinox, March 21st at 0007 Universal Coordinated Time, or Greenwich Mean Time as we say here in the neighborhood. That'll be the vernal equinox. Sunshine on the northern hemisphere will be equal to sunshine on the southern hemisphere. And, of course, that's said to be a particularly good period for radio propagation. So, three cheers for the vernal equinox. Now, I guess we're with the new music and the IGY and vernal equinox, I fear we're in danger of spinning off into the area of New Age and nuttiness. So it's time to get back to real radio. But still in the inspirational mode, I wanted to share with you guys a really nice email that came across the BitX20 Yahoo groups. This wasn't on QRPL. This was on the Yahoo groups group dedicated to the discussion of BitX20 transceivers. The BitX20 is, of course, the transceiver designed by our friend Farhan. And it's what's called bidirectional, because a lot of the circuits work both in the transmit and receive mode. And a lot of hundreds of them are being built all around the world, and a kit is being put together. Anyway, I came across this email from Dan, KB9JLO, and he was discussing progress on his BitX20 work. And he was talking about, my receiver had been working, but I couldn't tune in an SSB signal. I stayed SSB, and it never became intelligible. I have a great Elmer, mentor coach, Pete, W6JFR. In the process of diagnosing, I had a low volume as well. I discovered a bad electrolytic in the audio section. I had been tapping around and tapped this bad cap, and wow, it almost blew my ears off. Now I barely have to crack the volume control. Dan goes on, but I still had a problem. I thought it might have been the BFO, but wasn't sure, and no adjustment seemed to help. Pete suggested adding a fixed value 20 to 30 picofarad cap across the BFO trim cap. Voila, that did it. I put a 33 picofarad NPO disc across it. There were holes in the board and didn't even have to touch the trim cap. I listened to the Maritime Mobile Net and then to a couple of other gentlemen, one in Boston and the other in Canada. I was sure happy. As soon as I found out, I emailed Pete and he gave me a phone call of congratulations. I was and am on top of the world. This is my first scratch-built homebrew. I've built lots of kits, but I've never had any luck building, just a circuit from a schematic. The transmit section is working, and the audio listening in on my little shortwave receiver sounds pretty good. Looks like I'm putting out about 1 watt now. Bias is still quite low, but I know there is too much carrier in the signal, and I don't have an oscilloscope with enough bandwidth. The heatsink on the IRF510 gets quite warm as well. I have a moderate size heatsink on it. But I'm almost there, and this has been the most fun I've ever had in ham radio. This is what I've always wanted to do and hope to accomplish. I'm not quite done with this project, but I'm already planning my next one. Hint, look at Pete's 17-meter SSB transceiver. That's from Dan, KB9JLO. You know, when I read that, it really brought me back to the kind of the fun and excitement that you feel when you finally got that project done, when that scratch built project is coming together and you know it's going to work. You've got a few bugs to work out, but it's getting to the point where fixing the bugs are kind of fun and not so frustrating anymore. So congratulations to Dan and thanks for sending around that inspirational email. Let's see what else. Oh yeah, on the BitX20. There's been a lot of traffic on the BitX20, a lot of messages on QRPL and on their own group, and I think it's all really interesting and also inspirational. What's happening is some guys are putting together a BitX20 kit, and they're taking Farhan's design and making some modifications to it, and putting it on a board. On one specially designed printed circuit board, and it's interesting because some instabilities have come up in the process of designing the board, and they're in the process of working it out. Everybody involved, I think, recognizes that it's great that modifications and improvements are being made, and different people around the world are trying to use the circuit in a different way and change it and improve it and modify it. I think it's just great that you have a circuit that's come out of completely the other side of the world, and that radio amateurs around the world are collaborating on it and working with it. I also find it oddly inspirational that these instabilities have cropped up. I don't want to take any kind of pleasure from other people's heartache here, but it's just a demonstration that sometimes it's hard for everybody to get RF amplifiers, especially when you get beyond the 1 watt range, to be stable. And also, I think it's a point that sometimes ugly is easier and better. And Farhan's original radios, I think, were spread out, kind of Manhattan ugly style, and modular, and so you had different circuits on different bits of PC board that all came together, and they were all remarkably stable. But if you take the same thing and try for kit making purposes to put everything closer together on one PC board, well, that can cause some trouble. And I'm sure the guys who are working on it are going to be able to debug it and get it all working stable on the PC board, and I think it's going to be a great kit that people are really going to get a kick out of building and putting together. And again, I think the fact that folks around the world are collaborating on this and building something and kind of a global project makes it even better. I did one of the messages that I read on this thing. I really kind of rang a bell with me. I think one of the things that's happened is there's been a slight change in the IF frequency that the kit makers are building, probably for reasons of availability of crystals for the crystal filter. And they've now got the IF at 10 megahertz. And it's been noted that could possibly create a bit of a problem to people in North America who are close to the WWVB 10 megahertz time signal transmitters, because of course that's a very strong signal, and it could be getting into the IF. And I got a real kick out of that, because it reminded me of of problems that I had when I was building Doug DeMaw's Barebone Superhead. That was my first Superhead receiver project. It was for 20 meters. I was building it for CW, and it used as the IF 3.579 megahertz. That's the color burst frequency. It's the very, very commonly available crystal, because they were the crystals that were used in the color burst section of TV receivers. And I remember I just bought a big bag of them, literally a bag of 25 or 30 of these crystals, and picked through them to find the right one. The problem was that 3.579 megahertz is very, very close to a W1AW code practice frequency. So when I first got this receiver going, I was delighted that it worked. But I noticed that whenever I was listening to 20-meter signals, I would hear in the background pretty strong code practice from W1AW on around, I guess it was 3.58 megahertz or something like that. It was getting into the IF. And it was, I noted in an article that it was kind of, it was doubly frustrating, one on the technical level, because it wasn't supposed to be there, that signal, and also because it seemed almost like I was being taunted about my slow CW speed. It seemed like W1AW would be blasting away there at 35 words a minute, and I was being reminded that I was only capable of about 20 words a minute. So it was frustrating. I eventually took care of it by just putting some more front end filtering on the receiver, and some, I think, a little bit more shielding in there too, and it prevented the 80 meter signal from getting into the IF. But I was reminded of that when I saw the note about WWVB and possible problems on 10 megahertz. So good luck to all BitX 20 builders, and one of these days I hope to join you in putting one of those together. Let's see, moving on, kind of moving into the digital domain, some updates. I put a new video, a couple new videos, probably on the Gadgeteer.us video page. One of them comes from the Make magazine, Make blog folks, and it's on sort of an introduction to how to use basic stamp chips. It's well done video, and I think it gives you a sense of what the possibilities are with the basic stamp. Again, this is one of those things I'd like to get into someday when I become a bit more digital. But check it out; it's an interesting video. These guys, it doesn't really have a ham radio kind of feel to it. These guys don't seem to me to be radio amateurs. They're clearly electronics geeks, but not really quite radio amateurs. Maybe we'll have to encourage them to move into the world of ham radio. I think when you look at the video, you'll know what I mean. I've been having some difficulties with the RSS, the syndication files for Solder Smoke, and I appreciate everybody's patience in bearing with me on this. I think I've cracked the code on it, and we should be getting a solution, especially in the iTunes area, on this pretty soon. I won't go into the gory digital details, but I think found a way to let iTunes know that the RSS file for Solder Smoke is now on a different web host. And it may take a week or so, but I think that'll be squared away. Occasionally in email, I get people asking, what can I do to help with the Solder Smoke effort? And I'm delighted that people are listening, and that's fine. Email is, sending us email feedback is always nice. One of the things you could do, though, if you think about it, if you put a link on your website to Solder Smoke or to Gadgeteer.us, those kind of links, I think, help us in the Google search engine department and make us pop up, I think, a little bit more quickly when people do a search that includes topics that we're involved in. So if you could put links to Solder Smoke or links to the Gadgeteer.us site on your websites, that would help us. And of course, now I mentioned last week that we're running Google ads on the sites. If you could take a look at those Google ads, every time you take a look, a few pennies come our way. And we are, of course, saving up for our next year's web hosting fees. So taking a look at those interesting ads would be a good idea. I don't recommend the ads on laser hair removal. That was a bit of digital confusion, I think, in the Google computer. But the rest of the ads, I think, are pretty interesting and relevant. One thing that I noticed that came up on the Make blog site that I thought was real interesting, an antipodal map to tool while using a Google Earth. This is a pretty cool website there. You know, it gets to the idea that we all heard when we were little kids that, you know, if you start digging and you keep on digging, and eventually you'll pop out in China. Well, that's not really quite right, of course, for many reasons, but it is interesting to know what is exactly on the other side from me. Anyway, this Google Earth related site lets you do that. You just point the mouse at any point on the surface of the Earth, and on the bottom half of the screen, it instantly displays what is your exact antipodal location on the other side. When I was out in the Azores, this was great fun because I think there my antipodal location was somewhere in the Tasman Sea, right between Australia and New Zealand. And this was quite convenient because, in effect, no matter where the Australians or New Zealanders pointed their antenna, they were all pointed at me. Think about it. That was good. One other thing I wanted to mention. This just, it's not really in the digital news category, but on QRPL, they've been talking about a variety of things, and one thing that caught my eye is putting your ferrite cores in rock tumblers. And apparently there are guys who are thinking about doing this in an effort to get rid of the kind of sharp edges on the ferrites. Oh man, I don't know, that just seems to be kind of extreme, but I guess there may be some reason to it. Anyway, there we are. Billy is here with me in the shack. He's up early this morning, and I told him we're going to do a band sweep segment. Sometimes these things are pre-recorded, but well, this time we're going to do it live. So I'm moving the microphone. He's helping me out here. I'm moving the microphone over here to the operating position. One second. And this morning we're going to listen to a Heathkit HW8, my old Heathkit HW8, beloved rig, beloved to all QRPers. Got it set on 20 meters. And I can hear CW signals coming through. So I'm going to let you guys listen to what it sounds like to listen to an HW8. This is a solar-powered HW8, by the way. I've got it powered by my gel cell battery, which is constantly being trickle-charged by the Volkswagen solar panels. And even here in the concrete canyons of gloomy central London, we get enough, we get sufficient photons to keep the battery topped off. So, it's a direct conversion receiver. And if you guys haven't heard a direct conversion receiver before, you got to understand that you hear the signal at two points on the dial. As you tune through, and I'll be tuning up from 14.0 megahertz, you'll hear the signal. You'll hear it basically zero beat where the signal disappears. Then you'll hear the signal again on the top side. With an HW8, you've got to make sure that you're tuned on the top side, because that's the only way that the guy on the other end, who doesn't have a direct conversion receiver in most cases, is going to be able to hear you in the passband of his receiver. Takes some getting used to. Makes the band seem, I guess, about twice as busy as it really is, but it's quite workable, and many of us have been using direct conversion receivers for many years and with great success. Here we go. I'll turn up the audio gain. There you go. A lot of activity on the low part of the CW band. Again, it's 0751 hours on the 18th of March. Very strong signals. We're now about 14.025. Gotta be a contest on. I'll show you about the zero beat thing. This is a very strong signal. And I'll try to get him. Is there a beat? There he is, above it. I'll do it again. We're above it. There you go, below it. Get up into the high portion of the CW band here. I'll show you again. Here's a strong signal. There's below zero beat. Zero beat. Above zero beat. See what I mean? It's around 14.050. See if we find any brave QRPers calling CQQRP up here. A lot of Russians. All contest stuff. Alright, there we're sort of going into the digital area now. A lot of digi signals coming through on the HW8. On 14.1. Starting to hear SSB signals here. They don't sound great on the HW8, but you can get SSB and you can understand what they're saying. HW8's a bit narrow. There you go, Radio Norway 4 Whiskey Alpha.
Lima Yankee 6 Mexico.
Anyway, we're up now at the top end of the band.
Radio United, one Alpha. Romeo United, one America.
And that gets us up to 14250, which is the upper end of the HW8's tuning range. And I hope you've enjoyed that visit to contest land on 20 meters. Let me see. I've got to reach down here and get another piece of equipment out. Stand by. Let's see. Many of you know what's coming here. Right, Billy?
Yep.
Welcome to Solder Smoke Mailbag. Let's see. What are those papers I had here? Let's see. We had some... here we go. Got it. All right. Got some good email this week. I had asked about... the nets that I saw across the highways here in the UK under high tension power lines. I was fearful that this might be some sort of effort to create a Faraday cage or a Faraday shield or some sort of shielding to protect to protect motorists from the evil electromagnetic emissions of power lines. I wouldn't have been surprised to hear that, but Chris Pearson, M0JRQ, writes in and lets me know that it's not that. It's much far more sensible. And it says here, the distribution companies periodically take down and maintain the high voltage cables, and when pylon to pylon cables run across a busy thoroughfare, the contractors erect safety nets to prevent the cables from falling into traffic. Okay. It says here, one other note he says here, you'll notice that in the UK, where railway lines using pantograph-connected electricity supplies pass under a bridge, there is a yellow and black sign on each side of the bridge saying, quote, caution, overhead lines below. He says that always gives him a chuckle. Chris is a new listener to Solder Smoke. Glad to have you on board, Chris, and thanks for clarifying the bit about the nets under the highways. Another email we have here from Mika in Portland, Oregon, and he writes in with some really interesting and detailed information about the laser diodes that we've been discussing, I've got to dig into it a little bit more to get a better picture of how they operate. But it says here. I hope some of that helps you, or finds it, or that you find it interesting at least. I'm mostly glad to be able to offer some of the info in my field of expertise. I've got a BS in physics with an optics option, so my ears would perk up whenever you guys mention lasers. I like the show a lot, and I'm glad you decided to continue it. I don't have a ham license yet, but it gives me a chance to hear about some of the interesting general electronics projects people have going on, and it gets me primed for when I get started in ham radio. I enjoy listening to the show while I generate smoke. Oh, no, listen to this. I love it. I enjoy listening to the show while I generate ion smoke in the nanofabrication lab here. It can be long hours in solitude, so it's nice to have you guys keep me company. Sorry if this email is long, but I haven't yet found a cure for verbosity. No, not at all, Micah. It was very good. And, wow, ion smoke. Billy, that sounds even cooler than solder smoke, doesn't it? Yeah. Right. So thanks for that. Thanks for that, Micah. All right. Let's see. Looking at the timer here, it looks like we're at about the 35-minute point or so. And I guess that brings us to the end of Solder Smoke 50. Thanks for everybody who sent in emails. I hope you guys are enjoying this, and let us know if there's anything you'd like us to do more of or less of or anything along those lines. Have a good week. I forgot to mention. Mike was always telling me to talk about actual solder melting here. And I have to report that this week I haven't been doing too much, but I have been playing with LT Spice on the feedback amp situation, and have made some progress, and we're moving forward with that. But I'll talk more about that next week in the next episode. So, from M0HBR in London, 7-3s to the big group, and thanks for listening to Solder Smoke.